Accession number 19783, Reel 3.
And...
Were you involved in any of these groups?
I was only partially involved with one of the groups, and at the beginning of January, I think it was the 5th of January, 1943, the Germans set in a troop of SS men. But before I will describe this, I would like to say that in the house where we stayed, which was on the Genscher Street, there on the third floor, I think, lived a young man with his sister, whom he loved very much, and he worked for the Gestapo. He had permission to walk about without an armband, and he had permission to go out of the ghetto whenever it pleases him. His explanation to us was that he works for the Germans, not against the Jews. And the implication was that he worked for the Germans against the Poles. We looked at him completely as being crazy. Who can, in such circumstances, work for the Germans? But anyhow, this was his decision. And one evening, already after curfew, he came in and said, "I can't give you the details, but I'm warning you to be careful tonight. Something might happen." And with this, he said his goodbye and took his sister with him outside the ghetto. Now, it is about 10 o'clock at night. No thought of going out anywhere. But with such news, you can't go to bed to sleep. I was walking the room up and down, what to do with this sort of information. In the same street, several blocks away, was a temporary Jewish hospital, because the original hospital was evacuated. And the director of this hospital was a friend of mine. He was a lawyer, a friend of mine. And I decided, in spite of the fact that it is curfew, and any guard has got the right to shoot on sight anyone in being found in the street, I decided to venture and to get to him, to pass on this information. I came down to the main gate of my own house, looked around and listened, but I couldn't see or hear anyone. And I made a dash to the next block and stopped there again and repeated the same thing to the following block until I came to the block which was the Jewish hospital. I knocked at the door and there was no reply. Finally, a small little visor was opened, and I said, "I would like to see, to speak to the director of this hospital," and I mentioned the name, and the visor closed, and I was waiting. Finally, this friend of mine appeared at the visor, and I imparted disinformation that something is expected to happen tonight. He was, of course, not believing in it. We had 3 months of quiet. I said, nevertheless, I'm giving you this information, and it is all upon your conscience to do something to hide the people whom you are sheltering, because various prominent intellectuals and personalities were given kind of job, so-called job in the hospital, to have a legitimate cause to be there. And I left him, and I made my way back to my place, but via Mila Street, and there I imparted the same information. And finally, I succeeded in coming back to my place. And again, we were pacing down the room, up and down, until about 4 o'clock or 4:30 in the morning, when we heard from a distance the marching steps of a troop of soldiers. When they came through the gate into the ghetto, the whole column divided into two parts. One went straight to Mila Street, and the other part went straight to the Jewish hospital. We had shooting and explosions. And of course, I didn't know what was happening. But after a while, the shooting subsided. The troops gathered together and marched out of the ghetto. After a while, I learned that the first shots were fired in Mila Street, where a unit of the Jewish resistance attacked the German troops. They felt the first signs of victory, where German soldiers fell and were killed. The Jewish resistance took their arms and their weapons. And I made my way to the hospital to see my friend there. The hospital consisted of a long hall, and beds were placed on each side of the long hall. And of course, sick people in each of the beds. When the German soldiers came into this hospital with hand machine guns, they shot all the patients in the beds, and they were still lying bleeding. All the staff that were around were also shot. Only the people who were hidden in various hiding places in the hospital survived. This was the first attempt of the Germans to subdue the ghetto and to eliminate the ghetto. But they saw that the Jews were armed, and they intended to use the arms.
How important was it for you personally that the Jews had resisted?
I felt elated as well, because at least we could see that the Germans are not immune to violence, that violence can be exerted against them as well. Of course, we knew that this is an impossibility to conquer or to resist them completely. We knew that our fate is sealed. But we wanted also to at least to bring down with us as many Germans as possible. I don't want to reflect now philosophically what it means now.
Could you describe how you and your wife were able to get out of it?
As I described before, that smuggling was going on all the time, and we knew a chap who was cutting the grass or the lawns in the square. There was a small square in the ghetto, and he loaded a cart full of hay. We bribed one of the smugglers who stood next to the gate of the ghetto, and also the chap who owned the cart, and we were hidden among the hay. First my wife went with a cart of hay, and then I went with a cart of hay, although the hay was probed a few times, but we managed to get through. And on the other side, that is on the Christian side of the ghetto, there was an old nanny of my wife's who had a small little flat on the western part of Warsaw. And we made our way there with, of course, various hair-raising difficulties, but we made it. And we stayed there for quite about 15, 16 months. It was one-room flat with a kitchen and toilet, and this nanny, her name was Margaret, she was the official owner of this flat, and she had one Russian book. At the beginning we were three people, that is my wife, her brother, and myself. And she had to go out. Of course, we could not show our faces. We were only confined to be in the flat all the time. The only view from the flat was a blank wall at a distance of about 2 yards. And I remember how I craved to aim my sight to a distance, to see some greenery, to see some trees, but this was not possible. Even now, if I come to a field, I rejoice being able to see into the distance. This is perhaps more difficult for you, for anyone to appreciate who hasn't experienced this sort of life. We walked in slippers or in socks. We spoke in whispers, and so that any neighbor could not have any idea about us being hidden there. Margaret used to go out to one shop to buy one item, and another shop to buy a different item. And so we lived very frugally.
Did you get to hear about the liquidation of the ghetto in the region?
We lived still in the confinement of this flat. The only person who knew of my existence and my address where I am hidden was this friend of mine, Romek, who was the chief of the Jewish hospital, who also escaped the wars. And he ventured out because somehow his looks were, he had more blue eyes than I had. And one day he came along and he said, I've got good news for you. There are funds which were collected from people in Britain or in America, which were smuggled over to Poland with a main aim to support those Jews who are hidden. And you are one of them, and each of you who are still alive will receive 100 zlotys per month, which was a great boost, and we were very pleased with this because our resources were coming to an end. And this was going on. And then, of course, came April 43, when the Germans have finished their proper preparations of liquidating the remnants of the Jewish ghetto. They surrounded it from every side. They opened a bombardment with artillery and then the machine guns. And then finally the troop with flamethrowers came along and they put everything ablaze. And of course, you must have seen scenes of young people jumping from the third or fourth floor into the flames at the time because they couldn't stand the heat. But nevertheless, this was an overwhelming power which you could not hold out for long. And from the confines of my flat where I stayed, I could see still pails of smoke rising into the sky from the remnants of the ghetto. And what my feelings were, I leave to everybody's imagination. Each pail of smoke meant a few more lives of friends or relatives going up in smoke.
You survived. You survived with your wife, the Warsaw Uprising, a year later, although you were separated from your wife and you eventually reunited with her years later when you were wearing a British Army uniform and she was in uniform of the Red Cross. And you eventually came to this country. Looking back over 50 years, and more than 50 years, what does it all mean to you now? I mean, how would you explain to a younger generation who knows nothing of these events except what they read in history books and what they see on television, what would you say to them?
One must always look back and learn history in order to be able to face the future. This event, although unique, could still happen again. And it is happening in various theaters of war. It is happening in Yugoslavia, in Bosnia, in Africa, in various other countries. So we have got to derive lessons from what happened and not to allow any deranged people to come to power.
How did it affect you personally, or how has it affected you personally? Do you, for example, believe in God?
Yes. And it affects me in a way to try to help in education. Education is the most important aspect of human lives. If you are educated, if you have the means of understanding what life is about, then you can prevent these things from happening again.
There's one question which relates to obviously your ghetto experience. What is it like to be always hungry?
This is difficult to describe. Your whole being, your whole existence, your whole mind is geared on it into one direction, looking for food. We were trying.
We got an airplane flying overhead. Actually, Jim is kind of there.
Yes, it is difficult to describe what hunger means. Your whole existence, your whole body and mind is geared only to one thing, to hunger, and how to satisfy hunger. It's after the liberation, we were taken to a hospital, beautifully equipped hospital, a German hospital. Well, actually, it was an American hospital. And we were given also food, but because I was so weak, I could not take the food. I saved my life. Others who took the food could not digest it, and they became victims again, and they died. Many of them died in hospital, within the comfort of the hospital. Again, I come to the subject of education. As my life was saved by circumstances or by miracle, I decided that after I finished my work, after my retirement, that I should devote my life to spread education and to help others to achieve higher education. I'm supporting various student organizations and students who want to achieve their PhDs, and they want to achieve their aims in achieving grades at universities.
Did you ever think that you would survive your experiences of the war at the time where you finally ended up in a camp run by the Germans after the war's uprising? Did you comment on?
I must comment here that various people have got various dispositions regarding their attitude towards life. I, in the most abnormal and horrible circumstances, I always maintained a positive attitude towards life, to such an extent that people, not only in prisoners, not only from my barrack where I stayed, but from various other barracks, used to come to my place to hear a few crumbs of news in order to maintain their spirit. I always saw positive things in actions or in happenings rather than negative. And from various scraps of newspapers or conversation with the foreman, I could depict certain positive news, which of course I spread among my fellow inmates.
Did you
And when finally, in the spring of 1944, we could see whole waves and waves of enormous American planes flying over to be to deposit their deadly cargo on a nearby city in Germany, I knew that the solution will be soon, that Germany will collapse soon. But whether we shall survive, this was always a question mark, because survival was such a thing that you could in the last minute lose your life in various ways, not only by the cruelty of a German, but in various other ways. And so it was on the 11th of April. Yes, April 1944. The war was still going on, but my camp was liberated.
I wanted to say
1945. Was it 1945? No. 1945. April 1945. And the war ended in May, at 8th of May 1945.
Can you repeat that sentence where you said I was liberated on the 11th of April?
Yes. Well, you will have to eliminate it from the previous thing. Yes, I was liberated in April 1945, the 11th of April 1945. Three enormous American tanks passed by. And they did not dare to come into the camp, but they passed by. We were already left without any guards, but we were too exhausted and too weak to run anywhere. But they sent in other troops. When they saw the situation in the camp, where corpses were lying all over the place, in the dormitories, in the corridors, in the toilets, in the yards, everywhere, they surrounded the camp, and whoever was still alive was put on a stretcher and taken to an American hospital in Germany. There I was treated for about 6 or 7 weeks until I came back to life, and then I was placed into a Polish camp. Korczak was an educationalist. He wrote many.
Because we just want to get that, we can drop that in.
Right.